What y'all like?
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, and apologize for getting in here a few minutes late here this afternoon, but if you weren't listening, I was just on the call of Dominican softball this afternoon against Cal Baptist University. I'd like to congratulate the Lancers on two great ball games, beat the Dominican Penguins in both games. They played some great ball out there and looked like one of the best teams in the conference. The Penguins had a great road trip, but couldn't keep it going in those two games. And really kind of, I think, took a step backward in their season as they had a really great road trip previous to that. But were unable to keep it going and ended up getting swept in those two games. And again, this is Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We got a full day of full hour of stuff on our plate. It is March, and we are in the middle of March Madness. The NCAA tournament is officially underway. We had our first two games last night. A couple of play-in games. We had the first four and the 16 seed play-in games. We have action going on right now. Southern University taking on Holy Cross. That is a 16 seed play-in game. Holy Cross with the lead. Very surprisingly so. They came in with a 14-19 record and made it into the tournament via their conference tournament victory. Gets them the automatic bid. Southern University got in the same way. The winner of this game will play the number one seeded Oregon Ducks in the West region. And speaking of the seedings in the different regions, there is a lot of controversy surrounding that. Some people think that the Oregon Ducks should not have been a number one seed and maybe a team like Michigan State, but I don't know. I mean, that one is a tough one for me because you look at both of those teams and they were both conference tournament champions. The records were pretty similar. Michigan State had a little bit better record than the Ducks. They came in at 29-4, and the Ducks finished, I want to say, 26-7, I believe is what their record was at the end of the year. But the Ducks also run the regular season and conference tournaments. So they definitely were a good team throughout the season and were tops in the Pac-12, a conference that really was fantastic this season from top to bottom. We saw a lot of teams from the Pac-12 make it. Cal being another one from the Pac-12, Oregon State, the Ducks, Arizona made it, Colorado, Utah also in the field. So a lot of teams from the Pac-12 are competing, but I think the biggest problem people had was some of the major teams kind of got put in the tournament, and a lot of people kind of disagree with how it happened. Syracuse was a team a lot of people didn't agree, and Vanderbilt was another one. Vanderbilt already is out of the tournament. They played in a first four matchup last night against Wichita State, and that game was a blowout. Wichita State winning by 20-plus points. It was a good day for Baker and Coach Marshall at Wichita State. And a couple of those guys, it's like, I know, I understand part of it is that these guys, it's so common now in NCAA basketball for these guys to leave after a year or two, so we kind of have short memories with a lot of these players. But the players that have been at schools for a long time, Baker is one. Seems like he's been there for like 10 years, you know? It's like, how's this guy not out of school yet? You know, it's kind of, interesting how when a player is successful and plays at a school for a long period of time that, you know, in 4 years isn't really that long. I mean, Peyton Manning retired a few weeks ago. He played for 18 years. You know, that's a long period of time. 4 years, you know, it's long enough to definitely make your mark at a place. I mean, just ask, to bring up the Ducks again, just ask them about Mariota. I mean, they're building basically a shrine for him, and he only played quarterback there for 3 years. So it's kind of a, you know, college, I understand it's a little different, but it's still interesting thing to look at with them. And Wichita State, they're moving on to play in the next round, and tomorrow is when all the real fun starts, when all of the procrastinating starts, when, you know, if you're working or if you're a kid like me going to school, you may or may not be bringing your laptop to classes, and you may or may not have the games streaming on your laptop. You know, I'm, you know, not saying I will or I won't, but I'm just saying that it is a definite distinct possibility, and what a great time it will be. The tournament, the four top seeds, I already mentioned the Ducks. They are the number one seed in the West. The North Carolina Tar Heels are a number one seed in the East. We have the Kansas Jayhawks. They are a number one seed. And the last number one seed, and this one is probably the one that surprised me the most, the Virginia Cavaliers come in with a number one seed. And the Cavaliers, that one really struck me because, A, they didn't win the ACC regular season, North Carolina did, and B, they didn't win the tournament either, North Carolina did. And yes, I understand North Carolina is a very, very good team, but how do you justify giving a team a number one seed when they haven't won either of those two things pertaining to the conference, when a team, Michigan State, has a better record, is a very good team? Denzel Valentine could be the Naismith winner this year. Well coached, Tom Izzo, he's been to the Final Four before. It's not like this is a Cinderella team, like, say, a Wichita State when they had 2 years ago when they had Clay Anthony early and went, had that undefeated streak going, and they got seeded a little bit low than higher than you know, North Carolina defeated team was, and they ended up having to play Kentucky in the second round and got beat, you know? So it's definitely not something like that, and I understand Wichita did have a one seed in that as well, but they had a little bit lower of a one seed than you would think, and Kentucky ended up getting an 8, and that ended up being way too low for them. But anyway, back to Michigan State, they had a better record and they won the conference tournament as well. So how do you, I just have trouble justifying that one in my head. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the Cavaliers. They are a great team. They have players on their team that can take over games. They shoot the three ball exceptionally well. They play really great defense. And I think a lot of the reason why they lost on Saturday night to North Carolina was because they were running out of gas. I mean, their top shooters, I mean, I don't remember exactly what their percentage was, but they were not making anything. I mean, it was just Brick City out there in Washington, in D.C. I mean, it was a bad shooting night for the Virginia Cavaliers to play it lightly. And, you know, and they ended up losing the game, and they hung around for a while as well and led for a lot of the portion of the first half. And, you know, but that North Carolina team is something else. And maybe that's why, I'm sure that's part of the reason why the committee gave Virginia the one seed nod, as they saw how good North Carolina is, and that just because you lose to North Carolina twice, it, you know, in the conference standings and in the tournament doesn't necessarily mean that you aren't a very good basketball team and you're capable of making a run to the Final Four. That's not what they're saying. But, you know, Michigan State is a 2, Virginia is a 1, and you just got to move on from there. And Prom's lower in the field. I mentioned Vanderbilt. It's a team that 19 wins. Syracuse, another team. Oregon State, they came in to the field at 19-12. I can understand Oregon State making it into the field. And I think they're going to have a very tough first round matchup as well, as they will face off against Virginia Commonwealth, the number 10 seed in the first round. But I can understand them. They, to me, when you think about an NCAA team, a lot of times you hear it all the time, you see the eye test. And to me, Oregon State passes the eye test. They have talented players. Of course, Gary Payton II, of course, is their leading star. It's Gary Payton, of course, the glove. His son is tearing it up in the college ranks. Of course, a lot of people don't know this, but Gary Payton also was an Oregon State alumni and played at Oregon State. And of course, his son then followed in his footsteps. And, you know, I just say that because you don't really think of Oregon State as a basketball power. It had been many years since they had made it to the tournament. And, you know, it is cool to see someone following in someone else's footsteps, you know, to keep the legacy. And Payton's son, I should say, is very much, you know, like father, like son. I see a lot of things that you saw in senior that you see in junior. He's a good, very good defensive player. He is a good scorer in that he can get a bucket for you when you need one. And he's just the type of a player that you want in a tournament situation. And I see him as a player that can take over a game. And we've seen it many times in tournaments before when individual performers get hot, they can really take a team all the way. I mean, just ask UConn what they did with Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker kind of put the team on their back. And, I mean, you go all the way back to Carmelo Anthony as well. Dwayne Wade is another name. C.J. McCollum from Lehigh. Remember that when they beat Duke as a 15 seed, that was fun. Even looking at the Butler days, the Butler Bulldogs, and they're coached by Brad Stevens, you know, thinking Gordon Hayward and what he did to that Butler squad. And that was more of like the big three. You know, you had Gordon Hayward, and then you had Matt Howard and also Mac, the point guard. And then Hayward left, and it was Mac and Howard who took them back to the Final Four after that. And, you know, just special performers on big stages this time of year can really carry a team. And I think Payton for Oregon State, if he really gets it going, he's, you know, gets going scoring, plays with confidence, really gets hot, who knows where this Oregon State team could go. And they could be problems for a number of different teams in this tournament. We're past 5:15 here, local time. We're talking about some NCAA tournament action. That's definitely the big news this week in the sports world and really in the world in general, you would say. And maybe the other topic being politics, the elections going on with, man, all the crazy stuff going on. And this is Bros, Brews, and Bleachers here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. And we don't get political a lot on this show, but today I feel like we should. And talk a little bit about a guy. I mean, you may have heard of him. He's the leading candidate for the Republican Party right now. His name's Donald Trump. I mean, If you haven't heard of him, you're fired. Pun intended. But anyway, his campaign has just turned into a complete circus, to call it, to find a better term for the word. I mean, I don't know if circus, it's just like, man, these riots just keep getting worse. I mean, we saw it last weekend in Chicago with police officers with pepper spray and everything else. And yes, I understand that Trump brings some of it onto himself, and a lot of it, and some of it is for flair. And I understand that. And I think it's a very good political campaign strategy. I mean, look at it. We're talking about him right here on a show, this radio program that usually features talk about beer, sports, and, you know, fun stuff on TV. We don't usually go CNN on you and start talking about politics, but the fact that we're talking about Donald Trump in Marin County, no less, is big. And, you know, it's definitely worth, you know, thinking about, because when you think about it, we see Donald Trump every day. And, you know, us living here in Marin County, I'm not going to say this is how I am, but Marin County and this part of California in general is known as a very liberal area. And, you know, we're very, you know, progressive, and, you know, we acknowledge climate change, and let's see, a lot of people here around here support Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, but not so much Hillary Clinton. You see a lot more, I feel like, Bernie Sanders supporters around here. So, you know, pretty much Trump's political views and what this area's views are probably complete polar opposites, I would say. You know, Trump is very conservative. He's aggressive. He wants to cut in immigration completely. He just wants to, he keeps talking about how he wants to bomb ISIS and knock out ISIS in any way possible. And, you know, all of that is just completely opposite what you hear from messages from guys like Sanders or Hillary Clinton. And yes, those people are talking about completely different issues than Trump, but the fact that we sit here and we talk about Trump, we being citizens of Marin County and people here around Marin County, that to me, the fact that we're at this point talking about him, that's exactly what Donald Trump wants, is he wants people to talk. And that's why this strategy is working. But on that note, here's what I feel is the problem with that. You know, it's, yes, we should be aware of what is going on, but honestly, I think these protesters is a bad look for our society and for people supporting political things in politics, and here's why. When I see a lot of these protesters out protesting against Donald Trump and speaking out against him for, you know, mostly legit reasons. I mean, people have problems with his racial views and him being insensitive to racial issues and being offensive at times, and they do have points. But what I see a lot from protesters is people taking advantage of the opportunity to protest and protesting for the sake of protesting just to cause a ruckus, you know, to get the cops to show up and make them pepper spray. To me, a lot of the protesting in the Trump rallies reminds me a lot of the protests that went wrong over the Ferguson ordeal last year. A lot of those protests were very, you know, good, and they had a good message. You know, you think back to the St. Louis, now L.A. Rams. You know, St. Louis is a suburb, or Ferguson is a suburb of St. Louis. I got it mixed up there. But they, you know, so it was very relevant to that area. And the African-American players on that team, a few of them, came out with their hands up out of the tunnel. And it was kind of a, you know, a racial form of protest, I guess you could say. And, you know, and that was a good protest. You know, it got your message across. You know, it wasn't offensive in any way. It didn't get in anybody's way. It wasn't dangerous. And, you know, and mission accomplished. But then we saw Ferguson protesters like ones we've seen at Trump rallies where, you know, they're just causing ruckus and, you know, they're not protesting, they're rioting. And to me, there's a big difference between a protest that gets a message across and has a clear vision and a riot where guys are just going crazy to go crazy. And, you know, that's just, you know, that's not the right way to do it. And regardless of if Trump is a crazy guy or not, there's a right way to do things and a right way to not do things. And part of the reason why we have these divides in our society is because of things like this, you know, because people that are bigoted and don't think in the correct way will see people protesting and think, oh, look at these, you know, they're animals, you know, and that just more perpetuates that social construct that's already there and to me defeats the purpose. And I see a lot of that going on with Trump and the nature of the protests, I believe, defeats the purpose of the protest altogether. And obviously the protests are not working. Trump is dominating the Republican Party right now. Donald Trump just went and cleaned cleaned Rubio's closet in his own state. He only won one county in the state of Florida for a guy that lived there. You know, it's like coming home. It'd be like, you know, the Packers losing 75-0 at Lambeau Field. It'd be like, what? You know, or Duke getting blown out by 30 at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Like, just that, you know, when you're playing at home, you should have that home field advantage. And the fact that, you know, him and his coiffed over hair just ran through there like and just dominated is crazy to me. And it's, you know, so like it or not, he's not going anywhere at the moment. And if you want to make a difference, there's a lot of different ways, and I think a lot more constructive ways than doing so. Because to me, creating a spectacle around Donald Trump is exactly what he wants. He wants to be in the public eye. He wants people to get fired up about him. He's a reality TV presidential candidate, you know? Why do people watch the Kardashians? They watch the Kardashians because, you know, oh, is Kim going to show her boobs on TV again? Or, oh, no, well, what's Lamar Odom doing? Oh, he's ODing. Oh, God, you know? You know, people are just so enriched in the rich people issues and all the scandal. And for better or for worse, America loves it. It eats that stuff up. And, I mean, just look at House of Cards, like, you know, Claire Underwood and Frank and Claire Underwood, they're full of scandal and, you know, fakeness. And heck, there's even a show called Scandal that's very popular right now. So I think it's Donald Trump just taking advantage of that and Bernie Sanders as well. You know, Bernie Sanders, he's taking advantage of the political climate. Would he have been able to run for this office 4 years ago? Absolutely not. I mean, sorry, guys, I don't think the burn, we'd be feeling any burn if this were 4 years ago. There's no way Bernie Sanders would be competing with Barack Obama 4 years. No way. And I'm not saying I'm a huge fan of Barack Obama or I am not. I'm just telling you the fact that Barack Obama is a much stronger candidate than Bernie Sanders. And there's been a lot of candidates over the years that have been stronger than Bernie Sanders. But because Bernie Sanders is fighting for this progressive issue and people are so fed up with the government that they're eating it up. And that is the key to Bernie Sanders' success, even though he's been in Congress for a very long time. All right, so you're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. We just talked some NCAA tournament and some politics. That's kind of a interesting pair of things. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things going on in the NFL free agency landscape. And we also will give you a update on what's going on in the Southern and Holy Cross game. So you're listening to Penguin Radio, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Got a little Chitty Bang bringing us back here on Penguin Radio. I haven't heard him in a while. He's a local Bay Area rapper and has been around for a while. And kind of interesting to hear him back here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm Jeff Safford. It's been a busy day for me. A lot of radio action here this afternoon, and like to thank everybody again for tuning in to Softball with me and Lizette Cabrera earlier today. That was a lot of fun. Even though things didn't turn out so well for the old DUs, it was still fun to be back out in the ballpark. We'll be back out there on Saturday afternoon against Dixie State, another real good team coming into San Rafael. So that'll be fun for sure. And if you want to come out to the ballpark, it'll be Strikeout Cancer Day at the park as well. So stay tuned for that and stay tuned for more DU softball on Penguin Radio, and follow them along on the DU Athletics site as well, to follow along with what the Penguins are doing. So we just wrapped up kind of an interesting first segment of the show. We talked a little bit about the NCAA tournament, how top seeds and some of the controversy going on with that, and some of the lower seeds too, like brought in Vanderbilt and Syracuse. And man, I'm still a little confused with how those teams made it and how teams like Monmouth or Valparaiso or some of those teams I feel like definitely should be in the field, because just to go back to it just for a minute, it's more fun to see a team like a Monmouth who has a good record, won 27 games and beat some pretty good basketball teams, beat a couple of tournament teams. They beat SC, they beat perennial powers in UCLA and Georgetown as well. And, I understand that those two teams were not in the field and, had down seasons, but still the fact that you're a program scheduling those games against UCLA, who's won more NCAA titles than anybody, and Georgetown, that name speaks for itself. Also, the fact that you're scheduling those games says a lot. And to me, it's almost like they're being penalized for those teams not being as good as they normally are. And, and for these smaller schools, it's like the thing they have to do keeps changing. Do you have to get the big wins? Or, is it about your RPI? Is it about your strength of schedule? And, John Calipari talked about that as well, that he disagrees with the whole thing. But not going to get too carried away on that topic again. And we also talked some politics about Donald Trump and all the crazy stuff going on with him. There's another word that starts with an S that could describe how he was, all the stuff that's going on. And if we were on satellite radio, you could probably use that word. I'm guessing people understand where I'm going with that now. But and how a lot of the issues, yes, are done by Trump, but I think there's a lot of issues with the protests and the protesters as well. Or as I word it, I'm calling them rioters. They're not, there's a lot of people rioting around Trump, but there's not a lot of people protesting. That's kind of how I see it and how I see our society as well. And honestly, I don't like it. I don't like where our society is going. Just kind of, I feel like we're micromanaging every little thing, and everything that anybody says is just broken down on social media. And and the thing about it is, a lot of these things and offensive, quote unquote offensive things that happened on social media, people get pissed off about them for 2 weeks, and then you ask him about it 2 years later, remember when so-and-so did this and he said that and that, and people, no, so it's like, well, if you're just going to forget about it, then how important is it? So we went a little politics and social issues, and now we kind of went away from what we normally talk about with the political segment, so we're going to bring it back and go back to football. We're going to talk about some of the moves that have been happening in the NFL today, of some breaking news coming that the Patriots are back in the trade market. They made a trade yesterday, trading Chandler Jones away to the Arizona Cardinals and getting a guard and a second-round pick in return. Probably a good move for New England in that they saw Chandler Jones in his last year of his contract. They kind of saw the writing on the wall that they probably didn't have the money to be able to pay him the money he probably was going to ask. I mean, we've seen these big contracts for DNs come in, you know, and big numbers going to guys like Von Miller, and that will definitely continue. So the Patriots know they would have to give up a big chunk of change. And, you know, when you got a Collins, a Landon Collins on the other side, it makes hard to pay, makes it hard to pay both those guys. And, you know, and the Penguins see it. Hey, they needed some help up front on their offensive line. Their offensive line struggled in that AFC Championship game, and Tom Brady got thrown around like a rag doll out there. And that's got to be one of the biggest beatings I can remember in recent memory in playoff games. The only game that comes to mind where it was on par or worse was the NFC title game in 2006. Not 2006. It was 2008. There we go. It was 2008 with the New Orleans Saints and the Minnesota Vikings. That was the NFC title game that Brett Favre played in with the Vikings, and Brett Favre just took so many shots. And of course, right after that, in that offseason, was when the whole Bounty Gate thing came out with Greg Williams, which I think was kind of a load of crap, to be honest with you. I mean, not that I think it's justifiable to basically put bounties on players' heads, but the fact that the NFL punished the Saints in that situation is crazy to me, just because almost every team in the NFL at that point was doing stuff like that. I mean, we had heard former pros come out and say that. Teddy Bruschi was a guy that talked about that, who played for the Patriots, Super Bowl champion, talked about that was a common thing that happened in locker rooms, you know, and it's not meant to, you know, hurt players, you know, it's not, you know, they're not, you know, that it's more motivation to perform at a high level. And to me, that's fine. If you want to motivate a guy to, you know, hit, you know, the object of the game is to tackle a guy, right? So there is violence in the game already. So it's like, you know, make a big hit to keep a guy from catching the ball, or, you know, I don't know, sacking the quarterback, get a few extra bucks for doing that under the table, then fine, great. And I just think that it was just kind of a witch hunt. And, you know, I feel most sorry for the Saints after that. I feel like that whole scenario took a lot of the wind out of that franchise's sails, and I really think they haven't recovered fully from that whole scandal. But looking at what's going on in the NFL, it's talking about the Patriots and their move, and just comparing the hits Tom Brady took. So anyway, where I was going, that originally Tom Brady definitely did take a lot of shots in that playoff game against Denver, and they shored up a hole. And now it seems that they have made another move, making a trade with the Chicago Bears for tight end Marcellus Bennett. The New England Patriots would be sending reportedly a fourth-round draft pick. That's according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. I'm sure many of you have heard Adam Schefter and his two phones. You know, Kevin Gates isn't the only guy that's got two phones. Schefter's always up there with his two phones. And I have to say, it's been talked a little bit about on Barstool Sports, if you've read Barstool Sports, but Schefty's been having a little bit of trouble, you know, having, you know, not breaking the right story, you know, or breaking false stories, or having technical problems calling into Sports Center and stuff. It's been a little bit of a rough free agency period for old Schefty. He's got to bring it back in a little bit, you know, and Chris Morrison isn't around anymore. And, you know, it's like, uh-oh, you don't have anybody to pawn it off to anymore. And so, but he broke this story, the Bears sending Bennett to New England, and Bennett was seemingly already on his way out the door in Chicago. So the way you look at it for Chicago is, hey, you get at least you get a draft pick for him. And Martellus Bennett, I think this could be a big move for New England. This is a player that I think is quietly one of the better tight ends in the NFL and has been very, very consistent the last couple of years. And Martellus Bennett, you know, you could even make the argument Martellus Bennett was Jay Cutler's favorite target and in a lot of ways was his security blanket. But Chicago has not had the best run of seasons. They haven't made the playoffs since 2010 when they lost in the NFC title game to the Green Bay Packers. And it's been a long couple of years for them. And sometimes when you get hidden on a bad team, you kind of get lost in the shuffle. Just ask Calvin Johnson. His whole career kind of got lost in the shuffle of playing for the Lions. Or who's another player that could be like that? A little bit. Corey Dillon from Cincinnati Bengals had a lot of good years with the Bengals on a really sucky team. But, you know, is a great running back. And Martellus Bennett, I feel same way. He's a touchdown catching machine. He's great in the red zone. He's big. He's athletic. He can move. He's a tough matchup. I mean, he gave a lot of teams fits. And to me, this is the Patriots again trying to recreate that dual tight end set that they had with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. And of course, Aaron Hernandez is sitting in a jail cell somewhere after that horrible scandal. We're not going to go there. But, you know, they plugged in Scott Chandler this year, and he was good at times. And now this year, trying to get Martellus Bennett, I see him as a huge upgrade. And for a team that struggled to find weapons other than Gronk, you know, even Julian Edelman wasn't enough for the Pats this year, that I think Martellus Bennett gives them that other option. And, you know, because a lot of times you can line Gronk up in the slot and just use him as a big receiver and line Bennett up in the line. And Bennett was also a pretty good pass blocker and run blocker. He's a great overall player. And I think any team in the NFL would be more than happy to have a tight end that's as good as Martellus Bennett. And I think he will be a great fit in New England. In fact, he decides to head there. Another move that's possibly in the works is Eric Weddle. Eric Weddle has been linked to possibly heading to the Ravens, the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens need defensive back help. They were one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL last year. Eric Weddle, a guy who's getting a little bit up there in age. He's over 30 now, but he's a guy that a team that's struggling with a position like the Ravens are, he's a good guy to bring in because he'll fill the problem and fill the void today. You don't need to worry about drafting and developing a guy and hoping that it works. Eric Weddle will come in and play and be a good football player right off the bat. He's proven that already. He's one of the better safeties in this league. You know, but the downside is how long is he going to be able to keep playing as well as he is? You know, he is getting older and you start to lose a step, but this also gives the Ravens an opportunity to draft and develop a young safety behind Eric Weddle. And maybe they don't have to use a first-round pick on it either. They can find guys in the second round, third round, you know, or in deeper into the draft. And we've been kind of coming to see that in a lot of places, that's where you build your teams is from these later rounds. Just look at how the Steelers have built their wide receiver core. Antonio Brown drafted in the sixth round. Marcus Wheaton drafted in the fourth round. Martavis Bryant He'll be gone for a year, but a good player drafted in the fourth round. And you want to go back to Emmanuel Sanders. He was a later draft pick. And Mike Wallace as well, if you want to go back even further. So the Steelers have been finding success in the later rounds. The Green Bay Packers is another team where they find success in the draft all over the place. And there's just more and more talent coming out of the draft, you know, and players coming from all different places, and these guys are getting found, and it's hard to hide at times, it seems like, for these NFL players and or for these college players. And not that you want to hide, at least I wouldn't think so, but that's in the position where the Ravens are in now at safety. If they did in fact land Eric Weddle from the San Diego Chargers, and that move was also expected. The Chargers yesterday had already picked up Casey Hayward, a safety from the Green Bay Packers, a young player came out of Vanderbilt, and I was a little bit more concerned with that move because Hayward playing in Green Bay when he was on the field was pretty good. He was a Pro Bowl selection in his rookie year and led the team in interceptions, but he had a lot of injury problems and struggled to stay on the field the last two or three years in Green Bay. And to me, that's a big problem. And Green Bay, definitely not worth them to give him a big contract to bring him back. And the Packers, they will pay players that, you know, they need to keep and deserve to be paid. You know, Aaron Rodgers gets paid handsomely. Clay Matthews, Jordy Nelson got a big contract as well. And, you know, they have their core nucleus players, but they don't, you see it time and time again, they will not reach for guys that are going to be free agents. We saw Devon House leave last year, and Trevon Williams left Green Bay as well. We all saw that as fans as well. And the Packers just refuse to overpay on free agents. And there's a good side to that and bad, but Green Bay will really have to lean on the draft this season and maybe try to get a free agent, because their defensive backfield is getting, with the loss of Hayward especially, they're just running out of bodies back there. And it's going to, you know, and they had a lot of youth this season in their back defensive backfield as well, with their two rookie corner, they had a rookie corner and rookie safety in their starting lineup. So they got some work to do. The Ravens maybe cleaned up a little bit of their back end. They also made a move for Mike Wallace recently as well. The Ravens did. So they're addressing multiple needs on their team. They should be an interesting one to watch going forward. The Patriots making some moves as well. And also, the defending champions made an interesting move yesterday, matching the Dolphins' offer sheet to C.J. Anderson. 4 years, $18 million. He will stay in Denver. And interesting move, because it seemed like Denver wasn't going to budge on C.J. Anderson, that they weren't going to pay him any extra than what they thought they needed to. But they did, you know, reach out a little bit and paid him. So it was a little interesting to see there. But C.J. Anderson was a important part of that team at times, was the best tailback in their backfield. They did kind of had the two-headed monster thing going with Ronnie Hillman and C.J. Anderson. So they'll keep the continuity going there in Denver. They're still on the search for a new quarterback, however. So it'll be a fun rest of the offseason. We still got Still got a lot of time before the draft, and there will be a lot more free agent signings and other stuff going on around the league. So it's the NFL. It never sleeps. It's a 365-day-a-year extravaganza, and that's the beauty of it. All right. So we're going to take a quick break here on Penguin Radio. We're going to finish up the show after this and talk about our brew of the week. We're going to go back to Sonoma County, back north, for our brewery of the week this week. So you're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers with Jeff Safford here on Penguin Radio. We'll be right back. I wish you could believe me when I say it, it is so. It's not about you. Cause your hands are all of mirrors, and I wish that you could hear me, but I don't know what to do. Welcome back to the show here on Penguin Radio. You're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers here on radio.dominican.edu. I'm Jeff Safford. Just towards the end of our program here this evening, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in here on a great Wednesday afternoon. The Penguin softball team will be back in action on Saturday afternoon. Hope you guys will join us then for that action. First week back from spring break, and man, the weather has just been fantastic so far this week. For all the students that got to leave campus this week, it was definitely a good time for them to take off and get off campus. Anyone that got the chance to go home, because the weather was really terrible all of last week, and a lot of rain, but we needed it as well. So, you know, any rain we can get, and, you know, we're filling up a lot of those reservoirs and getting those, you know, getting the snowpack back in those mountains. So a lot of the damage the drought has done is being undone by a lot of the rain we are getting in this season. So I will look forward to not seeing the drought control commercials over the summer break. But the weather today was great. Got to be outside all afternoon with the softball team this afternoon, and just 70 degrees, almost felt like SoCal out there today. And you know, we are getting deeper into spring. Easter's coming up fast. Seems pretty wild. Just Easter, just about, what, a week and a half away now? And, it just seems like time is flying by. And for all the graduating seniors, me included, we're only a few months away from graduation. So that's crazy. And all seniors out there graduating, if you're a high college student, high school graduate, doctorate, it's all good, So if you're working on graduating from anywhere right now, that's pretty cool. And anyway, we've been kind of going all over the place here on Triple B. It's been started off with some NCAA tournament talk, and surprisingly, we have one game already gone final from today's action. It was Southern University and Holy Cross, and Holy Cross, holy cow, comes up with the victory. They must have had some divine intervention. Came in with a 14-19 record, but defeated Southern by a score of 59-55. And champion, the champion was their leading scorer with 19 points. That is an interesting omen right there. If I were the Ducks, I would be saying, watch out for Holy Cross. Sometimes you see some funky stuff, but when you see a player named Champion being a leading scorer for a Cinderella team going into the tournament, you know, it makes you think a little bit. Just saying, a 16 seed has never beat a number one in the tournament. I'm just throwing that out there. Now, should Dylan Brooks, Boucher, Tyler Dorsey, Elgin Cook, should all those guys go out there and mop the floor with a team like Holy Cross? Probably. I'll be honest, I haven't watched them play this year, but the Ducks, I'm a little familiar with them, you know, playing in the Pac-12, and me being a Duck myself as well in Eugene, spent a lot of time on campus there, obviously, and watched them play. So, you know, they love to fly above the rim. They're very well coached by Dana Altman, so I'll be excited to see it. And that is what's coming up next for Holy Cross, is the Oregon Ducks. So that'll be interesting, and we talked some politics as well. We talked a little bit about Donald Trump and that whole fiasco going on with the rioters surrounding his rallies and things. And we also talk some NFL free agency. So we're all over the map. We got you sports, we got you politics, we got you social issues. We're everywhere here on Penguin Radio, and we're going to finish it off with our weekly Brew of the Week segment. And the brewery we're going to go with this week is a brewery that some of you are familiar with, some of you probably not. If you're a beer head, I would imagine you are, but we're heading to Northern California. We're heading to more north Northern California. We're headed to Sonoma County. We're headed to Guy Fieri's hometown, Santa Rosa. And we're going to head to Russian River Brewing Company. Guy Fieri, the famous Food Network personality, hosts one of my favorite Food Network shows, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. If you don't watch it, you definitely should get a ticket to Flavor Town, as he would say. But this week, we're looking at the Russian River Brewing Company. And actually, to bring in Guy again, it's located on 4th Street in downtown Santa Rosa. It is on the same street as Tex Wasabi's, one of Guy Fieri's restaurants, and actually one of the first restaurants he opened. So if you want to get a little taste of Guy and drink some beer, well, there you go. Go on down to Santa Rosa. But Russian River Brewing Company, and of course, a lot of people have heard of Pliny the Elder, that is ranked as one of the top beers actually in the world by some people, and it is a fantastic beer and is worth trying. People come from all over the country to try that beer. And the other thing is Pliny there, they also make a beer called Pliny the Younger. It comes out 1 month out of the year, and that's a huge thing that surrounds that. And they have a lot of great food. And so, you know, so if you don't feel like leaving and going to Guy Fieri's spot, you can go on down and get some food as well. That's always a great option. But the other thing I like, too, is that they have some other great beer options as well. You know, they have it's not just about Pliny the Elder. I honestly think They have another IPA, and Pliny the Elder, to clarify, is an IPA. They have another IPA at Russian River called Blind Pig, and I actually like that beer better than Pliny the Elder. They also have pale ales that are great. Their Pilsner is a good beer. It's just a solid brewery. And what I really like about Russian River is that they could easily expand. They could expand tomorrow. They have the audience, and they have, you know, they have a big enough following that they could, but they choose not to. They keep it small, and they keep the emphasis on the quality. And I think that is a good quality in a brewery, and that is why I chose them for my brewery of the week this week. And quickly, before we get off the air, we're also going to make my sports bet pick of the night as well. I've still got the streak going. And tonight's pick, I'm going to go with the Golden State Warriors. And I know, you know, oh, the Warriors, you know, they're playing at home and they've won X. And they've won more games at home than any other team ever in basketball. But they're playing the Knicks tonight. And it just so happens that Dominican students are on their way to the game right now tonight. And the Warriors are favored by 15 points. And I believe the Warriors will easily be able to cover that spread. So take the Warriors on the spread tonight and win yourself some money. We're out of time here on radio.dominican.edu. This has been Triple B, Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm Jeff Safford, and man, I've had a long afternoon. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and have a great day.